described a remarkable scene that she came across one day. In her many trips out to the countryside, she observed one day a cobra that was alert and ready to strike its prey, its presumptive prey, just a few feet away in front of it, a bird. What struck her, though, about this situation was not its unusualness, but what the bird was doing. As she observed the situation, she realized that the bird was absolutely frozen by fear. Its eyes were locked into the cobra. It could see nothing else, and the bird was absolutely frozen by fear. This is exactly what is taking place as we're visiting the camp of the Israelites this morning. We're walking out along a hill where the Israelite armies are camped out. And as you begin to walk through the army and you walk through the lines of these soldiers, you realize that the terror is so thick that you could cut it with a knife. They are gathered on one steep hill. There is a valley that separates them from the Philistine army that is gathered on the other hill. And as you walk through the ranks of the Israelites, you begin to realize that every eye is trained on Goliath. Every eye. They aren't having any conversations off on the side. Nobody is behind the lines playing a game of chess. They are all locked in to the enormous giant who is stepping down from the Philistine army. For 40 days now, this man who is 9 feet tall, he is head and shoulders and chest and belly button taller than everybody else around him. For 40 days now, this man has been stepping down from the hill where he is with the Philistine armies. He's been walking down toward the valley where he's close enough to be heard by all of the Israelites. This man who's wearing a helmet of bronze, he has a mail of arms, a coat of arms that weighs 125 pounds, and he can sling it on like it's a tank top. He's got a tip of his sword that weighs 15 pounds all by itself. He has a shield bearer who's walking with him, even though he doesn't need one. Apparently, he's a government worker. For 40 days, this man has walked down into the valley and he has shouted to the armies of the Israelites, "Why should all of our nation go to war with one another? Send one man to meet me. If I win, then the armies of the Israelites will serve the Philistines. But if you win," and you can hear laughter rippling across the hill where the Philistines are gathered. "If you win, then our armies will serve you." For 40 days, twice a day, he has come down in the valley and he has cursed the Israelites and he's defied them to find one man who has the courage to come out and fight him. And for 40 days, the Israelites have been frozen by fear into inactivity. They can't move. You're walking through their army now. You're walking along through this camp. You notice everywhere you look, people are trained on the Philistine Goliath as he walks down in the valley, as he goes back on the top of the hill. Even during the day when he's gathered together with some of his friends and they're laughing mockingly at the Israelites, all the time everyone trained on him. As you walk through the valley, the hill where your Israelite soldiers are gathered, you notice nobody's gathered together in little groups. People aren't gathered around a campfire. Nobody's looking at resources. Nobody's brainstorming. Nobody's thinking creatively. There's nobody wondering, what sort of resources might we have to deal with this situation? Obviously, our backs are against the wall, but let's look around and see what we could possibly come up with that might help us in this circumstance. None of that. Absolutely every eye is trained on Goliath. They are frozen by fear. Now, I'm going to ask you to allow me to say the obvious this morning. You know this is coming because it is true in your experience. Every last one of us in this room is going to face Goliath sometime or another. In fact, a number of people in this congregation are facing Goliath today, right now. Your eyes are locked in to a powerful, powerful giant who is tormenting you and oppressing you and who has you paralyzed by fear. Now, I know that every once in a while in the church, we kind of like to whitewash this a little bit, and we, in the name of faith, we will say, well, you know, everything's going to work out okay for us, and we paint it by the name of optimism. But the truth is, denial is not just a river in Egypt. You know what I'm saying? And we live in a fallen world. The Garden of Eden is not the reality of our situation any longer. It is what God intended for his creation, where there would be harmony and there would be shalom and there would be relationships that are good and the love of God at the center of all things. But the Garden of Eden hasn't looked like that for a very, very long time. And the truth is, we now live in a very, very fallen world. And in this fallen world, every one of us is facing or is going to face Goliath. One of the hardest Goliaths to face, in my opinion, is the one that we create ourselves. This is a tough one, because at the end of the day, we have to stand back and we have to say that this is of our own making that we caused this to happen. Here in the United States right now, there are millions of people who spend money irresponsibly every day. And as they go up and they pay, every time they give thanks to Mr. Visa or Mr. MasterCard for the wonderful gift of being able to spend Mr. Visa's money again today. And then there comes a day when the credit card bill arrives and they open it up, and for the first time, the number hits them. And it's Goliath, and it's enormous, and it's overwhelming, and it strikes fear into the person who opens up that credit card bill. And at the end of the day, this Goliath is one of the worst, because you know that you've created it yourself. Millions of Americans doing this every day. One day you begin to utilize some substance or to practice some practice because it gives you comfort from the challenges that you face on a regular basis, and it gives you comfort for a little while. And then one day you realize this drink or this substance or this practice or whatever it is, that at one time you were the master and it was the servant. Now the roles have changed. And you realize that it's the master and you're the servant, and you're looking smack dab in the face of Goliath. There are a whole bunch of Goliaths of our own making. They're some of the toughest, because we know that we have no one to blame but ourselves for these Goliaths. And then there are a whole bunch of them that just step out from the shadows. You know, you've seen them, you've met them, you've seen him. He just steps out from the shadows one day. He's part of the systems and the structures of our world, and he just steps out in the situation. Is anybody here tired of this great recession that's now gone on for how many years? That started earlier in Michigan, and it seems to be carrying on longer in Michigan. Is anyone here tired? We've had people in our congregation this spring who have experienced the poke of the long spear of the Great Recession of the 21st century. People who've lost their jobs in our congregation very, very recently. And one more time, here we are facing a Goliath that we didn't create. This one has just stepped out of the shadows. Nobody's fault, but here it is, and here we go. There are the Goliaths that are just true for everyone. There are the realities of illness. People in our congregation who have heard the nasty, nasty word, cancer. And then they step out of the doctor's office and they wonder, how am I going to make sense of the world now that I'm living with this horrible word? People in our congregation who are experiencing the worst kinds of grief, who are trying to make sense of their lives and sense of their world as they face Goliath. And here's the problem. The problem is not only that we face Goliath, but the problem is we're staring at him. You see, this is what Goliath does. When Goliath stares at us with his bloodshot eyes, they call us to stare right back with our own, and before we know it, we are frozen or we are dumb. Did you know that it is a physiological fact now? Did you know that it is a physiological fact that when you're afraid, there's a part of your brain that kicks in, and it is a dictator. There's a part of your brain that kicks in and it takes charge, and it tells all of the creative parts of your brain to be quiet because it wants to take charge. And when you're frightened, the part of the brain called the amygdala says, I'm going to fight, or I'm going to run, or I'm going to be frozen by indecision. And so all of its options are nailed down, are narrowed down into basically three. I will run, or I will fight, or I will do nothing. And in the time when we most need to be creative, in the times when we most need to be insightful, in the times we most need to be wise, this part of our brain kicks in, and it won't allow the other parts of our brain to hardly even function. Folks, it's a problem. Goliath is in the room, and we're staring at him. This is what's going on on the hill on which the Israelite soldiers are gathered. They are absolutely frozen, immovable. They're staring into the eye of Goliath, and they are frightened. Now, you know the story, don't you? You know where this is going, don't you? You know that not far from here, there is a young man, a very, very young man, actually a boy who is watching the sheep by the name of David. By the way, the sheep are not named David. He is named David. His father's going to shout at him one day as the battle is taking place not too far away. His father's going to shout at him, David, I've made some peanut butter and jelly, and I've thrown some Diet Pepsis into a bag. I want you to deliver them to your brothers who are on the front lines. Go in haste. Follow my directions. He gives him very careful directions because the GPS wasn't working too well in those days. David follows his father's directions, and he makes his way to the hill that we've been looking at this morning, and he begins to walk through the ranks of the soldiers. And he notices immediately that the terror is so thick that you could cut it with a shepherd's staff. He walks to the place where his brother, his oldest brother, is waiting. By the way, talk about a picture of what we do when we are frightened. His oldest brother snaps at David. What are you doing here? Your heart is wicked. You've just come to watch me go to war, haven't you? I was just bringing some sandwiches. David is there when Goliath steps down from the opposing hill and walks down into the valley, and he begins to thunder at the Israelites. Which one of you will it be? I'm looking for one man who has the courage to come out and face me. And David begins asking questions. Who is this guy? What's he doing? What's the story here? He begins moving from person to person, asking, what's going to happen if somebody goes down and battles with him? He's just one guy. His questions finally make their way back to the king of Israel, Saul, who is as frozen by indecision as all of the armies of Israel. David finally makes his way over to Saul, and Saul asks, what are you asking about? David says, well, I understand you need somebody to go fight against that giant. I'm your guy. The king says, look at him. Look at you. Ain't gonna happen. David says, King Saul, I've been watching my father's sheep since the time I was just a little lad. There have been times when lions and bears have attacked the sheep, and I have delivered them with God's help. I've delivered them again and again with God's help. The Lord who has delivered me from the lion and the bear will deliver me from that Philistine. Amen. Oh, Saul's not thinking clearly. He's not thinking any clearly, more clearly than anybody else is. He doesn't have any options. He takes his suit of arms and gives them to David, who can hardly carry them. David puts on the whole bit of suit and arms, and he's so stiff he can hardly move. He says, this is worse than wearing a turtleneck with heavy starch. He pulls off the suit of arms. I can't use this, he says. Now, you know the story. But I want to pause the narrative for just a minute, and I want to ask the question. How is it that David has the courage to face down the giant that he is facing? How is it that young David has the courage to face down this giant that he is facing? I have a hypothesis. I think it's a pretty good one. I think that David, who had grown up in the home of Jesse, had been in Sabbath worship every week, week after week after week of his life, and had heard the stories again and again and again, the stories that were told on the Sabbath and stories that his parents had told around the table when they were gathered together for dinner, stories about God's deliverance and God's power and God's mercy and God's justice. I think David had been formed by those stories, a lifetime of being formed by the stories of God's faithfulness. I think we have good reason to believe that all those years that David had been out there tending the sheep and watching over them had been times when David had been learning the art and the poetry of prayer. I think we're on good grounds to make that hypothesis because in later years, many of the psalms in the Old Testament, many of the book of Psalms would be attributed to David. Beautiful, beautiful psalms, gorgeous psalms, which really are the prayer book of the Old Testament. Many of those are attributed to David, including this one that you have heard. Listen to it again. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Listen to these words. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. That's not speaking just of death. That is speaking of deep darkness. Yea, though I walk through the valley of deep darkness, thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. I believe that David's life had been formed by God. And the courage that he exhibits in this story is not the courage of David, but it is the courage of God, whom he knows and whom he trusts. And so, David, who is thinking clearly, steps away from Saul, no longer wearing Saul's armor. He begins looking around saying, what are my resources to help me face this giant? Let's see here. I've got this shepherd's staff. Not sure what it'll do. Where is that duct tape when I need it? He looks down into his shepherd bag a little further. He knows, my sling. Now that might come in handy. He walks over to a stream that's running down the hill where the Israelites are gathered. He walks over to a stream and he looks down inside. And he says, some smooth stones. And he reached down and pulls out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 smooth stones. Resources for dealing with the giant. He walks down to the valley. He calls out Goliath. He runs toward him. He puts one of the stones into the sling, and they've hardly rung the bell for round one. In Las Vegas, they hate these kinds of matches because they don't last long enough to make any money. He begins to swing the sling, and he lets her loose, and you know the story. One throw. Only one of those resources that was needed. One smooth stone right square in the forehead of the Goliath. There's an enormous thud. And then there is a giant fall. And then there's a moment of silence. And then there is celebration from the side of the Israelites that they had never, ever expected. Where did David's courage come from? I propose to you, his courage came because his eyes were not on the giant. But they were on the Lord. Where are your eyes this morning? I want you to notice that I did not say, where are your giants this morning? We all know about them. Every one of us here has them, some that are much, much larger than others. Where are your eyes this morning? The visitor to India described the end of the tale that I began this morning by telling. The cobra that was standing up ready for strike, a bird that was frozen, paralyzed into inaction just a few feet away, literally milliseconds away from the end of its life. And I need to warn you, if there are any young ears here, this story does not end well if you're the cobra. Because apparently the visitor's own presence startled the bird. It looked away from the cobra at the visitor and then suddenly remembered, I've got resources. Look at these wings. And away it flew to safety. Where are your eyes this morning? I want to invite you this morning as an act of faith to pick your eyes up off of the giants that you're facing. Oh, it's not that they're not real. They're very, very real. But I want to invite you to pick your eyes up off of the giants on which you're frozen, or because of which you're reacting into fight or flight, or for whatever reason, you're just not thinking clearly or creatively. I want to invite you to pick up your eyes, and as the author of the book of Hebrews says, let us set our eyes upon Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. Would you pick up your eyes and set them on Jesus on a Thursday night? It is the Thursday night on which Jesus was betrayed. It was the Thursday night before the day on which Jesus would be crucified. Would you put your eyes on him for a moment? Remember him gathered together with his disciples in an upper room. I want you to turn your eyes on Jesus, who took the bread that night and he broke it. Jesus, who was facing giants that we can hardly even imagine, and his disciples facing giants that we can hardly even imagine. And Jesus took the bread and he broke it and he said to his disciples, this bread is me. This is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Would you turn your eyes upon him on that Thursday evening as he takes the cup And he pours it out. And as he does, he says to his disciples, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." Would you turn your eyes upon Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, where the grace and mercy and love of God are poured out for you? And then, would you turn your eyes upon Jesus on Easter Sunday morning? Would you observe the women as they arrive at the tomb, and the tomb is empty? Would you watch as Jesus appears to the women and then to the 12 disciples, and they are overwhelmed with the power of life that has overcome death? Would you turn your eyes upon Jesus, the author of our faith, and the one who will bring things to God's conclusion in his time? Now, with your eyes lifted away from your Goliaths, and with your eyes turned on the love and grace and mercy and power and victory of God, consider your resources. Folks, you've got more resources for facing the giants that you're looking at today than you know. You have resources of faith. You have resources of love. You have resources of the community, the body of Christ. You have friendships. You have people that you trust. You have the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ who is working on your behalf right now. Turn your eyes on those resources. And then act. We're all going to need to act in the face of our Goliaths. We cannot sit by passively. To do so is to be frozen by fear. We're going to have to act. If you're in debt, tens of thousands of dollars to your credit card bill, find your resources and begin to act in a way that will bring healing and wholeness and health again. If you're overwhelmed by some kind of an addiction today, I can guarantee you there are people right here in this congregation who are on a journey of healing, who are months and years into sobriety. I'd love to introduce you to them. They're your resources. Act. Begin acting today. If you're facing a giant, the kinds of which we all face, lift your eyes off of the giant, turn them to the author and perfecter of our faith, and then get creative. Because it's Jesus who invites us to this table now. Jesus, the author and perfecter. Jesus, the Lord of life. Jesus, who has won the victory. And he invites us to this table to turn our eyes on him at this time. Would you pray with me, please?